Welcome to this, the first of our podcasts in a new series entitled A View from the Practitioners, Aim at 25, during which members of the Stevenson Harwood Equity Capital Markets team talk to some of the contributing authors to the Practitioner's Guide to the AIM Rules, the eighth edition of which was recently published by Sweet and Maxwell. I'm Tom Nichols, Head of Corporate and ECM here at Stevenson Harwood, and along with my fellow partner Tom Page, co-editor of the guide. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with Marcus Stuttard. Marcus is the head of AIM and has responsibility for primary markets in the UK across both AIM and the main market. He is responsible for the management and development of AIM, London Stock Exchange's international growth market for small and medium-sized enterprises. He is a regular speaker on growth and business funding issues and sits on a number of industry and policy advisory bodies. Marcus, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here and to have this conversation.
Great. Joining us also is my co-editor from the Practitioner's Guide to the AIM Rules, Tom Page, who will be hosting today's conversation. Tom, over to you.
Thank you very much, Tom, and welcome, Marcus, and welcome to all our listeners. I think let's start with a general question. Clearly an unprecedented year for everyone, Marcus, including the capital markets, and AIM has seen many companies coming back to the market to raise capital, to bolster their balance sheets and raise cash to face up to the crisis. How do you think AIM has responded to the COVID crisis this year?
Yeah, Tom, I mean, as you say, it really has been an extraordinary year. And I think when the pandemic hit, a lot of people's memories went very quickly back to the global financial crisis, and there were legitimate concerns about about companies and how the markets would perform as everyone for the first time really went to working from home. But the performance of the markets and AIM in particular has been really very impressive this year, and I think the UK capital markets have really demonstrated their resilience and their ability to provide long-term financing to businesses from small to very large. And that's across AIM and the main market. And I know we're talking primarily about AIM today. So, if we look both at further capital raising, but also over recent months, an uptick in IPOs, we are actually, significantly ahead this year from where we were last year. So if we look at the first 11 months of the year and compare them to last year, nearly £4.8 billion has been raised by companies, which is 42% up compared to last year. And also whilst clearly whilst the pandemic was at its height and the market was really focusing, or investors were focusing on supporting companies through further issues, we saw fewer IPOs. Actually, over recent months, we've seen a real uptick in the number of IPOs as well. So proceeds year to date are also actually up 9% compared to last year. And if we just put a bit of sort of European context around that, I guess, we see if we take all of the European growth markets, so far this year, 58% of all of the capital that's been raised in total has been raised on AIM. And I think 7 out of the 10 largest transactions, both IPOs and follow-on capital raisings, have been conducted on AIM. So, I think on pretty much every metric, we've got robust data that shows how resilient AIM has been. And then if we just look at the sort of the broader performance of AIM as an asset class, really, and we compare that to the main market, whilst, of course, I'm, having, as Tom said earlier, responsibility for both AIM and the main market, I'm not in any way sort of bashing the main market, but actually, the AIM indices have outperformed the FTSE All Share, the FTSE 100. So, to the end of November, I think the FTSE 100 was down about just over 16%, whereas the AIM 100, was up 9%. So, we've seen a really very strong and robust performance.
And one of the things that has been apparent to us is the speed with which companies have been able to come back to the market and raise money. So we had a few secondaries early on in March, April, one of whom was a retail client, which didn't really need to raise money, but just wanted to make sure it was okay. Compared to sort of companies who may have taken a different route, founders have chosen a different way of, instead of going public, maybe they've taken private money. The speed with which they were able to come back to the market and raise money was fantastic, and I think that the founders of that company were delighted with that.
Yeah, and I mean, I completely agree with that. I mean, I think a lot of companies, and particularly private businesses, have really seen the depth of the capital markets and have recognised the massive benefit of having access to a very broad set of investors. And actually, if you dig a bit deeper into the further offering stats this year, what is really impressive is that there's been a good level of capital raising across all of the sort of the market cap bands. So it's not just been the largest companies that have been raising capital. It's been across the entire market and also across all sectors. So even sectors that have been facing really challenging conditions, companies have been able to raise capital. And of course, it's always been one of the big strengths of AIM that there's a very deep pool of institutional capital, but also a very accessible pot of retail money. But the institutions in particular are long-term investors and are willing to continue to back businesses, and the whole kind of regulatory framework for AIM means that it is much easier for companies to come back to the market very quickly, and we've really seen that this year.
That's great to hear, Marcus. And that, as well as the publication of the 8th edition of the Practitioner's Guide to the AIM Rules, coincides with AIM's 25th anniversary year. And I just wondered, how do you think AIM is standing up? I mean, there are competitors, obviously, to AIM within the UK and Europe, and Brexit is a certain context. But how do you think AIM is positioned at the quarter century anniversary?
Yeah, I think AIM has really sort of matured and come of age over the 25 years, and I think that's really demonstrated by some of the capital raising and broader performance stats this year. I mentioned earlier the AIM statistics compared to some other European growth markets, and AIM does remain the largest European growth market by a significant margin. So the fact that 58% of all capital across all of Europe's growth markets has been raised on AIM, I think is really sort of testament to its success. But also, if we think about AIM in the broader sort of economic sort of context, one of the things that we did this year was to commission a piece of research to really dive into the contribution that AIM makes to the UK economy. And that showed that the UK companies on AIM alone make a sort of £33.5 billion contribution to UK GDP and directly support 430,000 jobs. And then if you include multiplier effects, so AIM companies employing people who spend money or employing advisors, those numbers rise to £67 billion contribution to UK GDP and 900,000 jobs. So, it really is a very significant part of the UK funding ecosystem, and also very complementary to other forms of finance, because through my time at the exchange, it's been very clear to me that by having active public markets towards the top of the financing ecosystem, the rest of the sort of funding ladder, if you like, operates more effectively. Because whether you're an angel investor or a VC or even a member of sort of family, you're a lot more likely to put money into an early stage business if you know that you've got a range of exit opportunities at the end. So I always think of AIM sort of almost providing a kind of magnetic pull-through impact on the rest of the funding ecosystem. And it's very complementary to venture capital and private equity. We see a number of venture capital exits onto the market. We see venture capital investors and private equity investing into AIM companies. And so, you know, it's very complementary, you know, so we think of it in that sense rather than really thinking about, you know, its sort of UK competitors.
Yeah, very interesting. I love those stats on how critical the market is in the UK economy. It's a shame we can't beam those directly into the Brexit negotiating team just to remind them of the importance of the city.
We do spend a lot of time talking to policymakers and to government and to Treasury, who, look, I think, you know, really get, you know, the importance of, you know, the UK's capital markets in terms of supporting growth. And, you know, since the financial crisis, we've clearly seen, which, you know, over 10 years ago now, but, you know, we've seen a big focus in the UK on trying to increase the number of startups in the economy. And then over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, that's really shifted to how do we support the scaling businesses, you know. And so we've done a lot of work with the likes of the British Business Bank and the Scale Up Institute and the, you know, the BGF. And it does feel like there's a real sort of coalition of the willing in the UK really trying to support growth businesses. And I think, you know, the recent launch by the government of the review of the UK listing regime, whilst it's focused really on the main market, it does show a commitment and an understanding that having active capital markets is really important to the whole economy.
That's the call for evidence that the Treasury put out in November.
That's right.
And they asked for views on the normal candidates of free float and dual share structures and prospectus exemptions.
That's right.
And of course, Brexit, when it happens, will present an opportunity. And maybe that will be a challenge for AIM if there is a change in the main market rules. Do you think AIM might have to respond to that?
Well, I think this is one of the big beauties of having, you know, both AIM and the main market within one organisation, really. You know, we for 25 years have been committed to operate a range of markets so that we can support companies from, you know, relatively small to the global titans. And I think, you know, as a market operator, we're fairly unique in that. There are other global exchanges that have, you know, very well established main markets or very vibrant growth markets, but very few have got both, if any, really. And, you know, we've always operated AIM, you know, and the various segments or components of the main market as being very complementary. And we see, you know, AIM, the high growth segment, standard listing, you know, premium listing, as all being complementary. So I don't see it as a threat. I think we just need to make sure that each of those markets and segments performs a distinct purpose. And, you know, it's worth remembering that we've actually had more companies that have transitioned from the main market to AIM than vice versa. So we've got a good flow, you know, in both directions. So, you know, we don't see, you know, these changes as a competitive threat in any way to AIM. You know, we want to operate a range of markets, as I say, that really can compete on a global stage.
Thank you.
The second part of our conversation with Marcus concludes in our subsequent podcast, which will be released next week. But for the time being, many thanks for listening.